Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Welcome back to Defined by Moments, my friends, as we continue our series through the book of Ecclesiastes and are examining what Solomon has for us. Now, go ahead and grab those Bibles and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. If you were with us in our last podcast episode, you remember that we talked about how Solomon situates a series of shortcomings within the natural world. He even takes mankind and talks about our position within the natural world and how it really creates a cycle of frustration, anxiety, bleakness. In essence, Solomon will use the superlative phrase, vanity of vanities. All is vanity. That's what we're dealing with. But when he gets to verse 12, he really makes this personal. We've already talked about how I believe verse 12 really does settle the argument of who is the author of this book. Because as we've talked about, Solomon says that he is the preacher. He's been king over Israel and Jerusalem. And really, there were only two kings that would qualify in that fashion. And since he was considered the son of David and not David, then it settles the case for Solomon. But notice what he does in verse 13 when he says, "And I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with." Now, my friends, at first glance, this appears to be some kind of a frustrating event, and it causes us to question, why would God make us, you know, have a life of busyness that is worthlessness? Well, we have to break that apart. So let's look at what he does with verse 13. He says he applied his heart. That is not just a haphazard, flippant kind of study. This literally means that he has devoted his entire life to a cause. And what is that cause? It's to seek. That means he is questioning. That means he is inquiring. That means that he is turning over every single stone that he possibly can in order to find any nugget, any hidden truth that may exist. But then it says he is searching it out. That means that he is exploring. That means he is excavating. He's digging deep. There is a seriousness. There is a diligence that is here. And one of the parts that I find interesting is the Hebrew term here that we reference as search out in Ecclesiastes is the same term that Moses used when he sent the spies to go and look at the land of Canaan. This was not something that they did very quickly. This was something that they did over an extended period of time, and they brought evidence back to Moses. So Solomon is really telling us that he is working hard to really get to the bottom of things. And it says that he's seeking wisdom. Now, this is a broad term that really it needs context. So when we look at this and we often think biblically, we will hear wisdom and go, "Oh, that's the wisdom of God." Well, normally, yes. But I want to make sure that you understand that he's saying here that he's searching out by wisdom. Here's the phrase, "all that is done under heaven." Now, we've already talked about how the phrase "under the sun" and "under heaven" really reference a worldly philosophy, a worldview of, you know, let's get rich quick, let's get as much stuff as we can, he who has the most toys wins. That's the system that Solomon is exploring right now. This is not God's wisdom. This is the system of man, and that's why he can then go straight to the conclusion where he says, "It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man." How? To be busy with. God has given us life. It was sin that destroyed the relationship with God, that destroyed the perfection of creation. So Adam and Eve's decision is what has plunged us into this life where we are unhappy and we are busy. But let's really look at what Solomon is saying. He's telling us that life is an unhappy, happiless burden. It's heavy. It's difficult. It's frustrating at times. And I've referenced it already, but this aspect of the children of man points back to Adam and Eve. You know, in when you see the phrase children of man, I hope you think of what we saw in the C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia series. It became a major motion picture with the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. How were Peter and Lucy, how were they referenced? They were referenced as the children of the sons of Adam and the daughters of Eve. So we see a similarity here. This lack of happiness is rooted in sin. God did not create the world as we currently have it. If you go back and look at Genesis chapter 1, we will see very clearly that God created the world good. It was man's choice, man's decision to reject God, to disobey him, that has brought in all the issues that we have. Now, I want to make sure that you understand the complexity of the statement that Solomon has made. Because remember, he's a powerful king of peace. He possessed it all. He produced written writings that we would call wisdom literature. He was proud of all of the construction that he has done, yet he turns around and says, it's an unhappy business. When he talks about being busy, he's looking at these the affliction or being brought low. Again, I referenced this in our last episode of how we have irksome business. It's the daily grind. It becomes depressing. It's hard to swallow. We will see individuals that lack character that are promoted up through the ranks, those that have solid character that do not get recognition. So Solomon is pointing out that there are issues in our modern world, and he as the king has noticed them. Look at verse 14. He says, I have seen everything that is done under the sun. There's that phrase again. And behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. So not only do we see that life is a heavy, happiless burden, but we see that that satisfaction cannot be found under the sun. It is beyond personal efforts. It's beyond all of our pursuits. And again, go back to that reference of that term vanity, where we talk about how it's brevity, how it's frustration, something that is here and is gone. It's that breath that, and it's out. So when Solomon is looking at this, he goes, I've looked at it all. Don't forget who I am as this king, but I'm still going to turn around and tell you that if you live a life under the sun, if you live a life under heaven, all is vanity. Now, I love this phrase here, striving after the wind. When we see this, we think that you're chasing the wind, kind of like you would imagine in our modern day tornado chasers. But really, the phrase references feeding on the wind. It slips through your fingers. It brings no nourishment to you. Now, how do you catch the wind? Do you bottle it? Do you put it in a jar? What does that look like? But, you know, the imagery of feeding on the wind. I have a 14-year-old boy in my home, and he'll get up from the meal table, and literally 5 minutes later, Dad, I'm hungry. Is there something else I can eat? If all I gave him was wind, that boy would starve. So think about what Solomon is saying. This unhappy life, this life that we have because of sin, it's vanity, it doesn't bring satisfaction, and it's not nourishing. Now, the amazing part of what Solomon does is he reverts back to his authorship of the previous book, Proverbs. In this short section, we're going to see him give us two what I call proverbial interludes. And he's going to do this all throughout Ecclesiastes. Verse 15. He says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. In other words, what's broken, what's not straight, what's not perfect, that's the world. That's what we're living in. He says it cannot be made better. And he is referencing human efforts. He is not yet talking about what God can do. He is only focusing on the human experience. And I will give you some very simple questions that will show you what I mean. Is crime decreasing? We know the answer to that. It's no. Is poverty gone from our world? No. What about disease? Have we completely eradicated all diseases? And once again, the answer to that is no. So this opening line says that our world is broken and it cannot be fixed by human efforts. But then he goes one step further and says, what is lacking cannot be counted. In other words, the things that we lack will always last. We will never be able to say that we have enough of, fill in the blank, enough money, enough clothes, enough possessions. We'll always want more. We have to have more. We truly are a people in a world, a culture, a system, I guess you would say, where the glass is half empty. And if we don't think that we have what we deserve, what do? We often break the law. We often try and cheat. We try and take shortcuts in order to get that extra bit that we think we deserve, when in fact, that means that we are contributing to the brokenness of this world that Solomon has talked about in that opening phrase. So we're seeing that satisfaction cannot be found under the sun. We're seeing that life is a heavy, happiless burden when we live without God in it. Notice what he does in verse 16 and 17. He kind of continues his examination where he goes back to his own life and says that he surpassed others. Look at this. He said, I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and said in my heart, I has had a great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is but striving after the wind. If you've got time, go back to 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 through 35, and see all the things that Solomon had. See how he was greater than any other king. And he turns around, what does he say? It's striving after the wind. He's looking at life through every possible lens, and his conclusion is it's vanity. His conclusion is that it's an unhappy life. His conclusion is that it will not nourish you, neither will it nourish I. As he says it, you're chasing after the wind. The real value of life is not pursuing in things, as Solomon has clearly described and has clearly stated right here. Now, as he wraps up this section, he goes right back to a proverbial interlude. Look at verse 18. He says, for in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Now, if you've ever met a high school student or a college student that is looking for a way to say, why do I need to learn anymore? Well, they have come to this verse, and they have pointed that out. But I want to make sure that we understand the real interpretation of what Solomon is saying. He says, no matter how much you know, you can never, ever know it all. In other words, he is telling us that we better face up to our own limitations. If we're living under the sun, we're doing the things that we think brings us satisfaction and joy, well, we don't know it all. You know, think of the volumes of information that are generated today more than at any other time in history. The content that is readily available at our fingertips. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, and I got my first master's degree in the 1990s. During that time period, you could not consult an online resource. It was considered unscientific, unreliable. You had to go to the library. You had to go get a physical book in your hand, and then you would cite that source. But ever since Google came to be in the late 1990s, we have websites everywhere. If I needed to fix something on my car, I would call a mechanic, I would call a friend of mine, or I would go get a manual. Nowadays, you Google it, or you go to YouTube and search for it. There are people like me that are putting podcasts out. There are folks that are writing blogs. There is a significant amount of information that is being put out across the world. And guess what? People are still unhappy. Our world is not getting better despite all of that information. That's what Solomon is saying. He's putting out there that all learning does not prevent sorrow. Learning is simply not enough. Knowledge is still not enough. Your hope has to be somewhere else. That is what Solomon is doing for us in this opening section of Ecclesiastes. He is level setting that if you believe that your hope is only in the things of this life, then you are going to be sorely disappointed. So as we wrap this up, I want to give you three lessons for life that I believe he gives us in this section. Number one, seeking wisdom is not success, but serving wisdom is. You know, it's not just the acquisition of knowledge. It's the application of knowledge that transforms it into wisdom. You can say that you're searching after wisdom, but if you're not following that wisdom, once you have found it, then you really didn't discover wisdom. And quite frankly, we could make that claim about Solomon in his life. Because look at how much of his life he wasted chasing the wrong things. And now at the end of his life, he's producing this reflection that I believe is filled with regret and remorse, but it's for our benefit. So number one, seeking wisdom is not success, but seeing wisdom is. Number two, a normal life will not bring satisfaction or fulfillment, but it will leave you hopeless. If all we have is this life, the 70 plus years that we will live, that means that when we die, there's nothing else. That means we have no purpose. There's no hope. There's nothing. It's just what we have in the here and now. But God has placed into our hearts a desire for something more. That's why we see people search for it in so many different ways. But Solomon is telling us it's vanity. It's striving after the wind. It's not going to give you what you think it does. And then number three, even though Solomon doesn't specifically state this, we have the implication in that third lesson is without God, there is no true wisdom. Knowledge is one thing, but wisdom is what brings God into the equation. How do I know that? Well, I'm going to fast forward a little bit and we're going to jump to chapter 12. And what does Solomon say? He says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. And he says two things, fear God and keep his commandments. In other words, we have to bring God into our lives if we want satisfaction. We have to bring God into our lives if we want life beyond our days. Ultimately, as Solomon looks at this life that he has lived and realizes that it was failing and falling short of the intended mark, he goes back and he talks about this again in the summary, verse 14. He says, I have seen everything that is done under the sun. And behold, that word behold means, let me get your attention. I'm about to give you something that you must have. Behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. My friends, if you want purpose for your life, you need the Creator in it. If you want success in your life, you need the Savior in it. If you want prosperity, not the world's prosperity, but if you want God's prosperity in it, then you need the provider in your life. If you want to experience joy that is really unexplainable to anyone that doesn't have Christ, then you need to submit to the one who submitted to his Father and paid the price for your sin and for mine. Solomon is telling us that without God, there is no true wisdom, and without true wisdom, there is no satisfaction. So my friends, as you examine your life in light of what Solomon is saying, understand that God must be in it for it not to be a life filled with vanity and striving after the wind. Thank you so much for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back with us in the not-too-distant future, and you take care.